When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
Welcome to Intelligence Squared. I'm senior producer Connor Boyle. In today's episode, we're joined by the journalist and author Michael Wolfe to talk about the real-life succession and the possibility of the end of the Murdoch empire. Without further ado, let's join our host, journalist and broadcaster for the BBC, Justin Webb.
Hello and welcome to Intelligence Squared with me, Justin Webb. I'm delighted to introduce our guest today, Michael Wolfe. He is a journalist, he's an author. You will know him almost certainly because of the White House trilogy of books, The Trump White House, Fire and Fury, Siege and Landslide. They're all up there on my bookcase behind me. They are distinctive, in my view, when it comes to books about Trump, because they are not preachy. They don't lecture, but they have the most extraordinary, sometimes gut-wrenching, toe-curling stories from the inside, and all of it managed with a relationship somehow with the man himself. And that seems to me to be relevant to what we're talking about today, which is his latest book, and which is this one, The Fall, The End of the Murdoch Empire, which to say timely is probably to put to underestimate just how wonderful it is that it is out at this moment. So, Michael, you're very welcome. Thank you for joining us. Can I ask you this, first of all? You have to start with Succession, really, don't you? And you start your book with Succession. The bits of this story that are the same, almost, as the TV series, but also the bits that aren't. Tell us about that.
I should preface this by saying that I'm also Murdoch's biographer, or was accepted as such almost, you know, more than a decade ago. And I sat with Rupert for a year, talking to him and doing extensive interviews and watching him, and with access to him, to his everyone in his family, including his mother, all his executives. And my book, The Man Who Owns the News, is, clearly informs much of Succession. And I would actually argue that its best bits are the bits that adhere closest to what's in that book. So there is this weird symbiotic relationship here. And I think Succession is fantastic. And I think it takes the storyline of the Murdoch family, and then it makes it into great television. But in fact, the characters in Succession bear little resemblance in anything other than their enmity toward each other to real life. You know, in real life, Rupert Murdoch himself is anything but a mogul-seeming person. I mean, he's kind of introverted. He's conflict-averse. He can't get a straight sentence out, and if he does, you can't understand it anyway because it's all mumbles. You know, he's a man who I've often thought had created this empire to be his to be his stand-in. It does what he could not personally do. You know, and for his children, in a way, his children are significantly more normal than the Succession children. On the other hand, they actually hate each other more than the Succession family.
Yeah, that enmity really comes out in your book. Does he have the same attitude to them that Logan Roy has. There's a bit in Succession, isn't it, where he says, "You're, I love you, but you're not serious." Does he feel like that?
Quite the opposite. He's really devoted to these children, and they tend to give him the back of their hands. You know, when I sat with Murdoch, we kind of communicated best when it was about issues of children. I mean, I'm a father, he's a father. And he, you know, he responds like any father. You know, he's desperate to have his children love him, and they are often, to say the least, ambivalent about that.
Why is that?
Every father can probably answer that question, or not answer that question. It's like, you know, you grow up with someone and he disappoints you, or he is not who you thought he was, and he wants more than you can give him, and all of you want more from him than he gave you, all of that.
Let's talk about the relationship with another child, with Fox News, because that's a very large part of your book, and it's hugely important. I mean, it's not, Fox News isn't important here in Britain, but my goodness, we know all about it, and we know its importance in American politics.
Yeah, and it's important in the UK because Fox News gave America and the world Donald Trump.
Well, what then is the relationship between Murdoch and Fox News? What has it been? What is it now? What's it going to be for the rest of Rupert Murdoch's life?
I mean, let me begin at the end. I think it will be the thing that he is most remembered for. I think it will be his legacy and his and the curse on his legacy. It's hung around his neck, Fox News and Donald Trump. But that's an irony, a tragic irony, maybe for Murdoch, because, you know, it is the one part of his empire which he's been probably the least interested in, and has had the least to do with. You know, he funded Fox News. You know, in 1996, he tried to buy CNN. They didn't want him, so he said, you know, screw them, I'll start my own news network. But all that meant is he put up the money and he hired a man by the name of Roger Ailes to do it. And Roger Ailes created Fox News, ran Fox News, grew Fox News, made it what it is. With very little involvement from Murdoch. Matter of fact, Ailes always maintained that Murdoch gave him a pledge of no involvement. Now, Murdoch has made that pledge many times in his career and broken it, but Fox News was distinguished always by how much money it made, and that was enough for Murdoch. Why ask any questions? It was delivering at a level never before imagined in the news business. So he was happy. Now, in 2016, Ailes was thrown out because of all kinds of sexual misconduct charges, which suddenly left Rupert kind of in charge of Fox. And he didn't really know what to do with it. And for understandable reasons, Rupert is not a television guy. He doesn't even really watch television. He's certainly not a programmer, and he's certainly not a television exec. So the effect of this was, without Roger Ailes there, who took over the network? Not Rupert Murdoch, but Donald Trump took over the network. Donald Trump became its not only its biggest ratings draw and its biggest star, but he was essentially dictated content. He was on the phone with Fox all of the time. The Fox people were on the phone with him all of the time. It was an adjunct to the White House. Actually, it was kind of central to the White House. So Murdoch couldn't really do anything about that, even though he has always detested Donald Trump. Even when I sat with him, he would, you know, Donald Trump, who was a fixture in the New York Post, Murdoch's tabloid here, he was kind of, to Murdoch, represented the buffoonery of Americans. A decade later, Donald Trump became the president of the United States, which was beyond anyone's imagination, no less Rupert Murdoch's. But Rupert was kind of responsible for this. And I think he just didn't know what to do about it, because also he's collecting all of this money. And so that makes him happy. And Donald Trump makes him very unhappy. What does he do? Now, in fact, about a year and a half ago, he decided to do something. Finally, January 6th kind of put him over the top. His children, specifically his daughter, had been telling him, you know, your legacy, think about it. And he kind of decided, Rupert, you know, hits the table with his hand because he can't speak very well. And that was it. I'm going to do something about this. And he kind of created the candidacy of Ron DeSantis and put Fox behind it and told everybody, let's keep Trump off the air. But in fact, that hasn't worked out at all. And the DeSantis candidacy has been kind of a joke. And the Fox audience remains the Trump audience.
So what happens now, then?
Well, I don't know. Rupert steps off into the sunset, theoretically. And
with Fox then in the hands of Lackland, who will do what with it? And if Rupert dies, and you address this in your book, if Rupert dies, or when he dies, the children really disagree, don't they, about what Fox should be?
Yeah. Fox is, and this is what my book argues. Fox is finished. It can't stand. It has, you know, on first, its internal contradiction is so large. You know, the Murdochs hate Trump, but Fox's audience loves Trump. How do you resolve that? James Murdoch, his position is he wants to take over the network. He wants to throw his brother out. And take it over and make it a force for good. Consider air quotes around that. And he could do that, you know, with the backing of his two sisters. That's what will happen. Now that's an almost unimaginable outcome. How could you diametrically turn this? This incredible ocean liner of a media property in the absolute opposite direction. It would be fun to watch, but it would seem to me to be an impossible thing to do. But the alternative, Lachlan Murdoch continuing to run Fox after his father departs this veil of tears, I also think is something that is not imaginable. It's not going to happen that, you know, his siblings have truly no appetite for the taint that Fox has left on their name and on their father's legacy.
If I can ask you a bit about the British side of the business, that isn't a great part of your book, but it matters enormously, doesn't it? Because Rupert Murdoch has this real love for newsprint. And when you talk to people who work at the Sun and the Times here in Britain, they know that love and they feel it and they appreciate it and they feel very grateful to him. If when he goes, or possibly even now that he's become whatever he is, chairman emeritus, does that love fall away?
I don't think the love falls away, but I think the a certain practicality asserts itself in terms of the newspaper holdings. The newspapers, you know, across the world, except for the Wall Street Journal, really don't make any money anymore. And there's no little appetite among his children for newspapers. There's little appetite for anyone anywhere for newspapers. You know, his efforts to combine his two companies, the television company, which holds Fox, and the newspaper company, which has the newspapers in the UK, Australia, and the US, didn't succeed. Not least of all because the Fox shareholders said, "This is what you want us to buy a newspaper company? No thanks." So you know, I think that writing is also very clearly on the wall. He'll sell the newspapers, or his the children, when they take over the company, will sell the newspapers.
The events calendar is filling up here at Intelligence Squared, and to create each one, we obviously rely on some brilliant guests and onstage talent. But behind the scenes, there's also a producer, a production team, and the budget in the mix too. You've got to keep an eye on all of that stuff in one place. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. And you can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because it's super easy to get started. NetSuite exists in the cloud, you see, no hardware needed. So you're cutting IT costs too. That's why over 37,000 companies have already made the move. And now, by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/squared. That's netsuite.com/squared. netsuite.com/squared.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
There are, I mentioned right at the beginning, your books about Trump are full of these vignette of just jaw-dropping moments. And I mean, there are lots in this book as well. The one that really struck me, just because it's kind of funny and strange, is the dinner that he has with Tucker Carlson, the great Fox host, as he then was, and Anne Leslie Smith, the woman he was, I think, engaged to, or certainly intending to marry. And they have a really odd dinner.
A 2-week engagement, yes.
Right, okay. Tell us about that.
You know, I mean, Murdoch's relationship with women is kind of fascinating. I actually once wrote an essay called, title of which was Rupert in Love. And he turns out to be a strangely romantic presence. Although Jerry Hall tells a friend, which I reported in the book, that Rupert has only had sex with every woman he's married, and he always proposes on the second date, and he's very susceptible to women. I mean, you would think that this big guy, you know, this incredibly powerful guy, but no, women kind of own him, take him over. His daughter Elizabeth once told me, well, she said, you know, you have to understand, he's very henpecked. So he got out of his marriage to Jerry Hall. And the description there is that, you know, she was out at night and he was falling asleep in his soup, and he just wasn't very happy. So his children sort of said, okay, you have to get out of this. But he's always, it's not a good look, Rupert alone. He really needs someone to take care of him, to do the things, the kind of physical things around him. Jerry Hall said her main job as Rupert's wife was to make his scrambled eggs in the morning. And at any rate, not long after the end of Jerry Hall, a new woman comes along and kind of nabs him. And her name is Leslie Smith, and she's from California. And she had been married to another rich man, and they seem to instantly get along because she was kind of interesting and forceful, and she kind of just grabbed him up. I mean, if you're a woman and you see Murdoch at a party and you slip in and you just start talking to him, just take over. You too can marry him. And one of Rupert's among among Rupert's many attractions to various women, his billions of attractions, you could say. But another attraction was Fox News for her, and she was a Tucker Carlson fan, so they had gotten engaged, and then Rupert had heard that Tucker was in California. Rupert and was at his vineyard in Bel Air, California, and he called Tucker and said, "Would you come to dinner?" And Tucker said, "Of course." And then he went, and it was a dinner with Leslie Smith and Rupert and Rupert's dog and the fiance. Leslie Smith fell all over Tucker. I mean, he was like this, you know, I mean, a godlike celebrity. And in fact, she told him, and she is a woman who, you know, was an evangelical Christian. It turned out, which in itself is odd for you because that's not something that Rupert Murdoch, an uptight Presbyterian is particularly comfortable with. But anyway, she said to Tucker, "You know, you are a prophet from God." And she said, "Really? This is not a figure of speech." And she got the Bible to read the passages which predicted Tucker's arrival on this earth, and et cetera, et cetera. And Tucker said it was a little awkward. But nevertheless, you know, Tucker reported they seemed very happy with each other. And then he went home, and then Murdoch called him shortly thereafter and said, literally like the next day. I mean, I think he went home on a Sunday. Rupert calls him on a Monday, the next day on Monday, and says, thank you for coming. It really meant a lot to me, to my fiance. And I really hope that you'll reserve the date for our wedding this summer. Tucker says, of course. An hour later, a reporter from Vanity Fair magazine calls and says, "I understand the wedding is off." And Tucker says, "No, that's ridiculous. I just spoke to, I know for a fact it is not off." And then this reporter begins to tell Tucker the details of the dinner, which Tucker says he hadn't told anybody. Suddenly he realizes that the Vanity Fair person knows something, has heard this something. But clearly, since he's just spoken to Rupert within the hour, he can't put this, figure this out. And Tucker says, "This must be wrong. It cannot possibly be." An hour later, the Vanity Fair reporter posts his story about the breakup of the engagement, which turns out to be true. So somewhere in the course of an hour, this engagement breaks up. So what does that tell us? I think it tells us, among other things, that Rupert Murdoch is 92 and not exactly in control of his destiny at this point.
Ah, well, that's an interesting point, because, I mean, the book is called The Fall, and the last chapter ends with the words, "He dies." He hasn't died, but you are looking at very much the kind of end days of a person and an empire.
Yes, you know, and it's this is historic. For 70 years, Rupert Murdoch has held more power and influence far longer than anyone else in our time.
And what a lot of people, I mean, there is a real division, obviously, about Murdoch. That's a truism to say that. But there is also this kind of sense of foreboding, I suppose, about what happens next. And you've been very clear about the open questions there are about what happens to the various bits of the empire. What is it like to be in that empire if you're not, if you're senior, but you're not the kids? I mean, is everyone kind of meeting in corridors and not saying things to each other, or what's the kind of mood?
The interesting thing is that everyone understands this, but this has gone on for so long, and Rupert has been so indomitable that there's a kind of sense of denial here. Everybody intellectually understands, Rupert dies, the world changes. But Rupert doesn't die, and this has gone on for such a long period of time, years now. Rupert's sell-by date should have expired a long time ago, but it hasn't. So everybody has a certain kind of, I don't know, suspension of disbelief about it.
Do you think he could have? I mean, if he is beyond his sell-by date, could he have rescued the whole thing, including his legacy, by getting out completely much earlier? Would that have worked, do you think?
But this is the frog and the scorpion and his nature issue. He wasn't going to do that. It's not his nature to get out. It's not his nature to give up money. It's not his nature to give up power.
So he's going to be chairman emeritus now, as we were mentioning earlier on. Is it his nature, whether or not it's his nature, and you made it clear what his nature is this a proper stepping back, do you think? Or is he still going to be calling people? Do you understand at all what that role is really going to be?
Yeah, I think it's totally bullshit. I think it's nothing changes. Rupert holds the votes. He holds the power. Nothing happens without Rupert's say-so. And he is, one of the most meddlesome guys I've ever met. So I think everything goes on. You know, Lachlan is in place. Rupert is in place. And all stays the same until the inevitable happens.
It's been a fascinating conversation. This, again, is the book, The Fall, The End of the Murdoch Empire. Michael Wolff, real pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much for spending the time with Intelligence Squared. I'm Justin Webb. Thank you.
Thank you.